This is the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders. Here's your host, JT the Brick.
Welcome to the official Raiders podcast. I'm your host, JT. We're going to get you ready for the big road trip as the Silver and Black, coming off a big win against the Jets, are on the road taking on the Pittsburgh Steelers this Sunday at Heinz Field. Alex Marvez will join us, the NFL reporter, the insider for FS1 and FoxSports.com, and Raiders legend Phil Villapiano, a guy who knows that rivalry with the Steelers as good as anybody. What a win for the Raiders last Sunday against the Jets in dominant fashion, 34-20 at O.co Coliseum. Same thing we saw the week before against the San Diego Chargers. The Raiders jumped out to an early lead and they rolled into halftime up 21-6, and they were able to do everything right in the first half of that game. But before I touch on the game, I want to talk about what happened before the game. It was a glorious day at the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum. The tailgating was spectacular. The weather was fantastic. On the field before the game, legends, a salute to the military and local police, and you could just tell that the Raiders, when they came out of the tunnel, were fired up and ready to play. We're not talking about slow starts anymore or figuring out the pace of another team. The Raiders, as they did at San Diego and did at home against the Jets, were ready to play, and they set the tone early in that game. Ryan Fitzpatrick went out with a thumb injury to his non-throwing hand, and the Raiders took advantage of it in the game. Derek Carr, 23 of 36 for 333 yards, four touchdowns, and no interceptions. And last week, if you recall on the podcast, I thought the Raiders would struggle against the Jets running the football. How could you not? The Jets had the number one rushing defense. That wasn't a problem for Latavius Murray. 20 carries, 113 yards in that game, a 26-yard run. Tywan Jones was explosive in the game. And the receiving core showed up again. Michael Crabtree, 7 receptions for 102 yards and a touchdown. And way to go, Andre Holmes, 2 touchdowns in that game. The long one, a 49-yarder for Andre Holmes, and the Raiders did such a good job. And the defense, Nico Thorpe, the way we saw Amerson play, Khalil Mack was getting to the quarterback right before the ball came out. He was there. Just a good performance overall. Really solid. DJ Hayden again, rock solid overall. And that's what the Raiders need to build on. Consistency, playing fast, and Jack Del Rio's game plan has been incredible. We've talked about him being an AFC West guy with the Broncos before becoming the head coach of the Raiders. And now that he's putting in and installing those defensive game plans, and Ken Norton Jr. is putting a bow on it and having those players show up and practice at 100%, the Raider defensive line is healthy again. Charles Woodson got another interception. And that's the way games should be like every time the Raiders take the field in Oakland. That type of intensity, that type of energy. Great win for the Raiders, beating the Jets 34-20 and having the tiebreaker over the Jets now in the wild card, as the Raiders are the 5th seed in the AFC playoff picture. Our first guest on the official Raiders podcast is Raiders legend Phil Villapiano. And Phil, we got a lot to get to with this upcoming Raiders game at Pittsburgh, but I want to go back to that victory against the Jets. You know, a lot of those Jersey Jet fans, what they think about the way the Oakland Raiders smashed them in Oakland last Sunday.
Well, it was a beautiful thing, and I don't think they liked it very much, JT. And matter of fact, I was in a little bar over here right by our beautiful Atlantic Ocean, and everybody was filing in, and everybody had their colors on, and it was a beautiful pregame. But and then when they scored first, it was like, here we go, and then we just slapped them, bam, 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 3 touchdowns, shut them up good. They were done by the first quarter. It was a beautiful day back here.
You know, Phil, what was great about that game, and we've talked about the offensive line now coming together, but Derek Carr, the importance to run the ball. The Jets had the number one rushing defense coming into that game, and for the Raiders to run it and for Latavius Murray to go over 100 yards and for Carr to attack Revis on the first play of the game, it really looked like the Raiders had the swagger that they had when you played for the Silver and Black.
Well, you know, it looked that way. I mean, even last week against the Chargers, it's really looking good. and I'm just holding my breath, hoping that we're for real. And you know what? They're all these guys are pros, and they're all the very best at the game. And all you got to do is, you know, get a little momentum and get a little, you know, team unity and get, you know, think you can score and think you can run. And these guys are good enough to make it happen. So, you know, one more big win, which I'm really hoping is going to happen this week, and it couldn't happen to a better team than the Steelers. So let's beat those guys up. Our guys have left three in a row, and you never know. We may just run the table.
Phil Villapiano is our guest. Phil, let's get to Pittsburgh. And, you know, your career with the Raiders going up against the Steelers, that's why I thought about having you on this week, because from the Jets and your connections back east and then the way you played that entire rivalry against the Steelers, still to this day, is that what fires you up every time you see football on Sunday? You see the silver and black, you know the Steelers. Is the fact that you played in arguably the greatest rivalry of the 70s, even though they weren't in the same division as you, when it started and when it ended with the Steelers, it's something that defined you as a football player?
Boy, you're right, JT. And I don't know how it got so fierce so quick. Because I remember going out there on George Blanda's birthday, and it was like my rookie year, and the Steelers beat us, and we were like shocked because they hadn't beat a playoff team like the Raiders, and like they were horrible. And then all of a sudden, you know, they got really good and they got really big. Not that I want to accuse them of doing anything illegal or anything, but the guys were gaining like 50, 60 pounds from one year to the other. We're like, what is with these guys? But anyway, they came to play. They knew if they beat the Raiders, you know, then, you know, they would look good around the league, and they came after us. And you know, we weren't about to be, you know, we didn't like what people came after us. So we went right back in their face, and they were good enough. And just kind of like what we just said about the Raider team right now, all of a sudden they got momentum and they weren't going to be stopped. That can happen, and that's what happened to the Steelers. And then the games got bigger and bigger and rougher, and you take a, you know, an L.C. Greenwood and a Joe Green and a Blunt and a Cam and a Russell, and they had players to stick it to us, and we had players to stick it to them. And man, I could never believe anything could get more outrageous than playing against the Kansas City Chiefs, but the Steelers did. It was just fun. And this only happened to me once in my life, JT, and it was we went up there and it was 75 and it was so cold outside. We were, you know, we walked on the field and my arms, I started getting goosebumps, and I said, what's going on with me? Well, I was so excited to play the Steelers. My body was just having this crazy reaction. I was like, what am I doing? What's going on here? And I don't know if I was cold or excited, but I just know it was because we're going to play the Steelers. So yeah, it got so crazy. And then, you know, I think you remember the year when my roommate Bob Moore got beat up before the game. Yeah. That added a you know, by the police, and that added a little more to it. And then we had Chuck Noll telling us we were the criminal element of the NFL, took us all to court. We had to go to court over in San Francisco. That added a little something to it. I remember, you know, when Tate and Atkinson chased down, beat up Swan, and Franco ran for a touchdown. Those safeties were on the field. They were over there beating up Swan. I mean, all these beautiful things added to the rivalry, and then the playoff games were just fantastic. So I don't know how it got going, but once it got going, it was like almost like Hurricane Sandy hitting the Jersey Shore, man. It was out of control.
Phil Villapiano's our guest. Phil, you know, researching the history of this rivalry now, and it's so incredible. The all-time series, the Raiders lead 15-12, and if you look at the regular season, it's 12-9-0. From 73 to 81, the Raiders played the Steelers 9 times and beat them 7 times, but lost 2 out of the 3 title games. So this was a team. Talk about it from the Immaculate Reception in 72 on, and then the 5 consecutive seasons in the postseason. You guys knew these guys in the regular season. You could beat them. Then the championship game. Then I want to touch on the offseason, how this fueled you leading up to your first Super Bowl championship there in 76, because this team, you just couldn't escape the fact that they could catch you in the championship game, but you knew you could beat them in the regular season, and you were arguably a better team than the Steelers back then.
Yeah, you know, see, that is something I thought about a million times, and every time I get with Franco Harris or, you know, Andy Russell, these guys that were in those games, they always reminded me that they won the big game. And not that every game wasn't big when we played them. It always meant a lot. They did. They got us twice. And then the one time that was so sickening was in Oakland when right before half we scored and they called a tripping penalty on Jim Otto, which I you know, we didn't have good replay back in those days. I don't think anybody ever saw it. But instead of us going in getting seven more points ahead, we kick off to them in the second half, and they go back, they go down and score. So it flipped the game all around. In Oakland, we were a better team. We had a better season, and we lost to them. That one really hurt me, and I just couldn't get over that our offense couldn't score because we could score on anybody. And that was a bad game for us. And then the one other one when we were over in Pittsburgh, and they froze the field the night before, even though they had tarps on it. We had tarps in the middle where they could run the ball, but on all our receivers were out on ice. So it was like, you know, we kind of laughed at that, you know, figuring, oh, good move by you, you Steelers. But those were two devastating losses, and we definitely thought we could beat them both. And, you know, I remember the third year in a row we were going to play them in the championship game, which we did, and we finally beat them. And that was the year we could have lost to Cincinnati and knocked out the Steelers. And I'll never forget John Madden, you know, talking us before they there was a Saturday special against Cincinnati, and he says, you know, there's been a lot of talk this week about us guys losing this game, and then the Steelers knocking out. We don't, you know, so what I'm saying, Madden was saying before the Cincinnati game, we would never lose this game to get them out. We want those guys. So we took them both on, and we beat them both, which was great. So, you know, it just, you know, and then backing up the Immaculate Reception. I mean, that game was just a total fluke. We finally, you know, got Kenny, you know, Kenny got in the end zone. We got the score we needed. We got a 4th and 22. You can't do better than that, and then you lose the game. So that was, I think that was a fluke. The other two times, just was disgusting football by us Raiders. And then we finally got him, which was great.
And Phil, going back to that seven,
we got him that one year when we went to the Super Bowl. I don't know if you remember opening day that year we played Pittsburgh in Oakland, and that was another crazy game. And we ended up winning that one. Kenny went crazy in the fourth quarter, and I think we scored 3 or 4 touchdowns to beat him. But that was a nutty game. And hey, they all were, and I loved them all. And I'm just dying to go to Pittsburgh this weekend to see this game. I just can't, but I'll certainly be watching.
Phil Villapiano joins us. One other thing I wanted to sprinkle around that rivalry in those games. In 74, before you lost that title game, the See a Hands game was the week before, and I can tie that into the entire 70s when you played. I mean, if you look at the history of the rivalry with the Chiefs that you mentioned, the Colts, we haven't even touched on the Dolphins and the run that they had, and then you sprinkle in the Steelers, and you look at the history of Super Bowl championships between the Steelers and the Raiders, 9 combined, Pittsburgh 6, Oakland 3, and then you roll in the Dolphins in the 70s. Phil, I mean, do you pinch yourself and do you agree that you played in the greatest era in the history of the NFL, from the 70s right to the start of the 80s, the greatest games, the greatest players, the most Hall of Famers, they're all there right around you.
Well, you're right. And, you know, because I was doing it, I don't want to ever be braggy or anything like that. I can't stand when everybody says, oh, you played in the greatest time. I still think the NFL and the teams today are terrific. I think we had an era that was just so cool. I mean, nobody got traded. I mean, we had the same defense for 9 years in a row. How can you beat that, you know? And you had a team, and that was your team. And everybody knew that was your team. And everybody knew who was on the team and who was going to come out, how they were going to play, and who they hated. And they knew every little thing about you, where you went to church, you know, what car you drove in. It was just a, you know, the Raiders were, and every other team was the same way at the time. They were part of the communities, and it made for great football. But then you go to the change, and you're right. I'll never forget some of those days, those games against the Miami Dolphins. They beat us up one time down there. Ah, and that was their 17-0 season, I believe. We were the AFC Championship game that year. And we went down there, and I remember Gene Upshaw was walking around the locker room writing $25,000 on everybody's pads, because that was a big deal in those days. If we won that game, we were going to make $25,000. And everybody got all excited, and we went out there, and they had Larry Zonka, like, oh, my God. He was like a bulldozer. And Bob Greasy just picked us apart, and, you know, they'd be this good down there. So, but what happened, they came to Oakland the next year, and we beat them, I think it was 9-6, with George Blanda kicking 3 field goals versus the Premium kicking 2. And that was a great game, and they moved it up to Berkeley, and we got about 80,000 in the stadium, and it was just a fantastic game. And then I think it was that year, at the end of the season, they came back again, and we had to see a hands game, which was fantastic. You know, that, I mean, I think that was probably the most exciting right. football game I was ever in, and I just couldn't believe Clarence Davis, the great athlete he was, just couldn't catch a pass. And he went up there and snatched that ball from like 4 Dolphins. That was unbelievable. And how he won, it was unbelievable. That,
yeah. Like,
that game, the game down in Miami, unbelievable. Chief games. I remember the fights in the Chief games. And I remember one time I had a 15-yard penalty just for raising my arm, because I wanted to scare Dawson, who was scrambling out of bounds. I just wanted to let him think I was going to hit him. I raised my arm, and the flags came flying, and the refs were so afraid that the Raiders and the Chiefs were going to have one of them big battles again. You know? They all were great. You know what?
Yeah.
I have to say, yeah, and you didn't even get to Burt Jones, and let alone Burt Jones. When we started down there, you know, with probably the greatest quarterback of all, one of the greatest, Johnny Unitas, could lead those Colts. And if Burt Jones led those Colts, it was the Colts, the Dolphins, the Chiefs, the Raiders, the Steelers. And what about that Dan Fouts down in
Fouts down in San Diego. Phil Villapiano joins us. You're right. Hey, Phil, quick backstory. Last Sunday in Oakland, I had the pleasure of being up in the owner's box with George Atkinson, Cliff Branch, Fred Biletnikoff, Art Toms, Dave Casper, and we're watching the game, and the Raiders were dominating, and they throw up on the scoreboard. Who has the Phil Villapiano has the Raiders record for most fumble recoveries. Is it 12? Is it 15? Is it 17? And everybody's sitting in the box, all your teammates, looking at the scoreboard, and I'm kind of just sitting back behind him. And then it comes up, 17 fumble recoveries. And Atkinson looks at Biletnikoff, and Biletnikoff shaking his head. And it felt like you were in Mark Davis's box. 17 fumble recoveries as a Raider. Unbelievable.
JT, that is a great story. I wish I was there to see that. And, you know, I just wish they had some better defensive stats back when I started playing. And I'm going to tell you one story, and I don't want you to think I'm bragging, because I don't talk that way, but this one to this day amazed me. Ray Malavasi was my linebacker coach my rookie year, and we're about 6 games into the season, and, you know, like, they just didn't talk to rookies in those days. But Ray called me aside one time, and he said, Phil, I just want you to know you're having really a good season. And I said, geez, Ray, thank you. He goes, yeah, you're averaging like 25 unassisted tackles a game. And I said, yeah? Like, I didn't know that was a big, you know, any big deal. When I was at Bowling Green, I probably made 40 a game, you know? But that was a big deal in the NFL. I'm like, God, you know, like, when I look back now, I said, I wish somebody would have counted tackles way back when.
Yeah, Deacon Jones, before he passed away, told me that too, about the head slap and what he was doing back in the day before they were keeping real stats the way they are today. Hey, Phil, as we wrap this up, this is a big game, and you know the Steelers well. Roethlisberger is back. Le'Veon Bell is done for the year. If the Raiders win this game, they own the wild card tiebreaker over the Steelers. They beat the Jets. Finally, tell the fans how important this game is in the history of the rivalry and the opportunity that the Raiders have to take that next step in 2015.
Well, I would like to say that you know, as a professional, and I fear a little bit that, you know, the Raiders are young, but it's going to be up to Del Rio to let, you know, and you hear this, you hear it over and over again, you got to play them one at a time. And John Madden was the best in the world at getting us ready to play one game, not two or three, one. I want the Raiders to focus because the Steelers are going to be come out and they are going to play. They're going to play as nasty as they possibly can. They're going to do everything they can to intimidate us. They're going to try and, you know, take our young guys, throw them, you know, get them out of sync. And they're going to do everything we can. We have to be totally focused. If there's a mistake, we got to forget about it immediately and just go back to the way we play football the last 4 or 5 weeks. We're on a beautiful, beautiful, you know, run right now, and we can keep it up. There's no secret. We can do it, and we just got to be ready for the worst. And I particularly love games when it meant the most. I mean, that's the way I want these guys to go into the game. This is your Super Bowl of this week, you know, and you play your hardest and give it all. And don't worry about next week. And I just hope that I think if they do that and they come out and they're smart. And what I mean by that, you know, JT, there's been a few play calls the last couple of weeks where I'm looking, I'm saying, I have not seen a call like that in a long time from the Raiders. And so we are making some great calls. Our coaches have got to be focused. Our coaches have got to find new weaknesses. And we got to exploit them and laugh at them and smack them when we can. And then we're going to get a victory. And you're right. We'll have the tiebreaker victory over the Steelers and the Jets, because we're probably going to see those boys again the way Denver's playing and the way Cincinnati's playing, mm-hmm. New England's playing. It'll come down to that, and we'll have the tiebreaker. So this is huge. This is the biggest game we've had in the last, let's say, since, when was the last time we were in the Super Bowl? This is the biggest game since we were in the Super Bowl in 84.
You got it, buddy. Good to talk to you. You're the best. I wanted you to come on because I want the fans to understand the history of the rivalry and to understand how important that game is. We'll talk to you down the road. I'll either see you on the East Coast or back on the sidelines in Oakland.
JT, anytime, call me. And fans, be wild.
Joining us on the official Raiders podcast, one of the best NFL insiders in the country from FoxSports.com, FS1, does a great job on SiriusXM. He knows the Raiders and he knows the NFL. Alex Marvez joins us. And Alex, you know, you're on my radio show every week on Fox Sports Radio. Did you think the Raiders would be 4-3 heading into this rivalry game against the Steelers?
No, I didn't. I thought Jacques Del Rio would have the team on the right track, but I just didn't know how quickly, he would get them going in the right direction. You know, let's be honest here. It's been a tough decade plus for this Oakland team. But what I think I'm so impressed about with this team right now, a couple things. I think the offense, you know, so far ahead of where I thought it would be. And that's not a slight on the talent. It's just that it takes time, you know, for a unit sometimes to pick some things up, especially with a second-year quarterback in Derek Carr. But he looks so far advanced. And I got to give Bill Musgrave a lot of credit. This is his fifth stop as an offensive coordinator, which means at four other places he failed, basically. And in here, though, he seems to have found the right mix of things. I think this offensive line has done an outstanding job. We can dive into that. And defensively, you knew Jack Del Rio was going to put his fingerprints on it. But I'll be honest, I look at that secondary, and I'm like, except for Charles Woodson, who I actually have in my FoxSports.com midseason awards, the NFL Defensive Player of the Year front runner. Charles leads the NFL in interceptions with 5, and he's been the glue to that unit back there, playing through injury as well. What a warrior. He has been unbelievable. All things pointing up out in the Bay Area.
Yeah, let's stay with the secondary, because I, like you, did not think they had the depth, especially at the cornerback position. T.J. Carey, his ability to play safety and move from cornerback, and other guys stepping up. How much credit goes to Reggie McKenzie and this next man up philosophy, where the secondary is actually helping the Raiders win games?
Yeah, and you know, they're young guys. And of course, you know, Reggie is part of the rebuild. You're going to go through some growing pains. You know, D.J. Hayden, too, deserves a mention here, and I know you don't want to slight him, JT, but I mean, he has shown some growth growth this year. I think more growth than we've seen in his first couple seasons in the NFL. It's starting to click for him. And, you know, I think, you know, when you look at T.J. Carey and the versatility to switch to safety, position he never played before. I mean, that's great coaching when you're able to help someone go ahead and move to that position the way that the Raiders have. And, you know, with Nate Allen hopefully coming off the injured reserve, you know, with the ability to return list sooner than later, that'll allow T.J. to return to his cornerback spot. Hey, look, reality is this. If there's an injury, a serious injury in that secondary at the cornerback spot, I am a little bit worried about it. But you look at Nico Thorpe, he has stepped up. There's a guy that wasn't on anyone's radar really entering the season. It's just been a positive thing, and I think it speaks well, too, of Ken Norton. And, you know, when I was out at Raiders camp this summer, JT, I really got the impression that these guys were buying in hook, line, and sinker to everything that Ken Norton was telling them. Guys like his energy, they like his enthusiasm, they like his intensity, and it really shows up on Sundays.
Alex Marvez joins us. Yeah, I've been saying that for a while with Ken Norton Jr. I love the fact that he brought in Carroll's competition Thursday just by following the mold of Pete Carroll and what they did at practice and how they competed every day. But then Jack Del Rio installing that game plan, and Jack's been doing that in the AFC West the last 3 years, and to bring those defensive game plans to Oakland and then have Norton on the back end at practice and find a way to get these players to buy in. That combination of Del Rio and Ken Norton Jr. seems to be working out.
It really does, and it's interesting. You touch upon something that we've seen from Dan Quinn in Atlanta, a Pete Carroll disciple, and Dan Campbell has borrowed a page from it as well, a way to reach millennials. And I say that, I'm not being facetious here, but young people, JT, they're wired a little bit different than us. And, you know, that's the reality of it. You have to do some things a little bit differently. They don't want adversity in the workplace. They want to have fun with the things that they're doing. It's sort of like all the, you know, in the Bay Area, you have all those tech companies that do some offbeat things. Well, it's the same thing now in the NFL. You know, I mean, in the case of the Miami Dolphins, they brought out black jerseys and pants to reward offense and defense. Who plays better? You put basketball hoops in the meeting room. You do things like this. And that competition thing really gets guys going. It keeps your attention in practice rather than it feeling like you're going to work every day. And I think that's a great combination between Kenny and Jack, because Jack does have such defensive acumen. And, hey, you think about Ken, too. He brings in some new ideas as well from Seattle. And that's great because it helps Jack Del Rio grow as a coach as well. And then you look at the younger players starting to develop. And like, for example, a Khalil Mack. You know, when the Raiders played the Chargers, he dropped back in coverage 17 times. You know, he'd been just almost a pure defensive end before that. Now you're able to start using his athletic ability to have a little more diversity in your defense. Teams can't predict, you know, your tendencies as well as they could. I mean, it's been a great job by this Raiders D.
NFL insider from Fox, Alex Marvez, joins us. You know, I'm not a big fan. I've never been a big fan of oversized defensive tackles who aren't in perfect shape. But I'm starting to understand now, you need big guys like Jelly Ellis and Dan Williams in there to slow down the run, to free up guys like Mack and Alden Smith who can come off on the edge. Getting those guys back healthy with the addition of Malcolm Smith and Curtis Lofton and the defensive philosophy, if the Raiders are healthy up front with that defensive line, they've turned out to be a defense now that is powerful at stopping the run.
You're right. And, you know, Jelly Ellis was a player obviously chosen for a different defensive system when Dennis Allen was there, but his skill set is being used by the Raiders. And, of course, Dan Williams really started to come into his own last year, and it was interesting talking to Bruce Arians about that. He told me that when they put Dan at defensive end rather than the traditional nose, they saw some things in him that they hadn't really seen before, some playmaking ability. And now he has taken to this 4-3 defense like a duck to water, which is great. And I'm so glad that you mentioned Malcolm Smith because, you know, Super Bowl MVP, right? I mean, you know, honestly, if you ask people who was the MVP of Super Bowl 48, most people probably think Percy Harvin or Marshawn Lynch or Russell Wilson. No, it was Malcolm Smith. And, you know, he just sort of faded into the background last year, lost his starting spot. But now he goes to Oakland, and, you know, he knows what Ken Norton wants, and the guy is playing great football for the Raiders. And you love the development, too, of Neron Ball. I know that he's hurt right now, but the former Florida Gator, the fifth-round pick, has really shown some positive signs as well. If he can stay healthy, and that's been a big concern throughout his college career, the Raiders really found a gem in the middle rounds of this year's draft.
Yeah, I love what the offensive line's doing as we transition, especially Donald Penn, Gabe Jackson, Rodney Hudson coming in. I talked to you about that after that deal went down to anchor that offensive line. Were you surprised Latavius Murray was able to run for over 100 yards against the Jets?
You know, it's a great question because I was. I didn't know how much success. I picked Oakland to win the game, but I thought it would be a lot, you know, a lot tougher than what it seemed to be. And I know, of course, once Ryan Fitzpatrick went out so early in the game and the Geno Smith experience, not a good one for anyone involved with, if you're a New York Jets fan. But this offensive line, you know, and I talked to Jack Del Rio about this on Tuesday night on my SiriusXM NFL radio show, he says that Rodney Hudson is playing at a Pro Bowl caliber. And Jack is not one to blow smoke, as we know. There's no bouquets of flowers coming out after losses and things like that, like there might have been around there before. He thinks Rodney Hudson is really the glue to this line. I think Donald Penn may be a player who's in line for a contract extension because he's done such a nice job at left tackle. And, of course, in Gabe Jackson, you've really got one of the top up-and-coming guards. And you know what? Think about the job Mike Tice has done as well. He has a familiarity with DeMarcus Webb. A guy, JT, let's be honest, no one really in the NFL wanted the guy. He bounced around for a little bit. He comes in, and he's doing a real nice job for the Raiders as well. So let's give Tice credit. Let's give that unit credit. Because I'll tell you this, right now, that is the best offensive line in the division. It's also the healthiest.
Michael Crabtree is in a contract year. I know the owner, Mark Davis, wants to make sure that the Raiders attack downfield and loves this open style of offense that we're seeing. We'll get to Musgrave in a second. But Crabtree, is he that good of a player? Plus, he's playing for a contract. Plus, he's good as a secondary receiver instead of being the top guy. Amari Cooper is the future for the Silver and Black.
Well, you know, this is interesting because Amari and Michael have such a good relationship. And, you know, Amari is such a soft-spoken guy, but he's such a professional, you know, and he really cares about his craft. You saw that from the very moment he set foot, you know, out in the Bay Area, out at Oakland Alameda. He knew what he wanted to get done in the NFL and has really worked hard for that. You know, and I think maybe, just maybe, and this is sometimes one of the difficulties of evaluating a free agent. You know, we look at Michael Crabtree and we kept saying, wow, the numbers are down. He's not doing great. Must be the Achilles tendon, right? Must be the fact that this guy hurt himself and is never going to make it back to what he was. Well, all of a sudden you put him in a different environment with a better offense for him this year. And you also put him basically a guy who can run it, and Derek Carr. And all of a sudden, Michael Crabtree's putting up great numbers again. And I tell you, if the Raiders, with their salary cap situation, I think it would behoove them to sign him to a contract extension because he and Cooper really could be the cornerstones for this team for years to come. And kudos to Michael Crabtree. We don't talk about him very much as far as NFL comeback player of the year or anything like that, but he's a guy who may get in the conversation at some point because he's putting up some nice numbers.
Alex Marvez is our guest on the official Raiders podcast, staying with Derek Carr after that interception against Denver that cost the Raiders the game. I wanted to see the confidence level that Bill Musgrave would have with him. They opened it up in San Diego, and then again, attacking Darrelle Revis on the first play of the game, even though it was incomplete. Carr got into a rhythm. The confidence is there. Talk about Musgrave and opening up this offense, the middle of the field, getting those backs to catch the ball out of the backfield, and if they can get the tight end to step up and get 6 or 7 receptions a game, this could be a really explosive offense.
You're right about that, and with Clive Wolford, you know, of course, you got a little growing pains there from the University of Miami, injured early on in the season, as we all know, but I think is going to develop into a real good player. You know, at Miami, unfortunately for Clive, you know, they didn't feature the tight end during his time there. So there'd be times when, for example, his senior year against Virginia Tech, he wasn't targeted for a single pass in a game. How do you have a guy who's that talented and you don't target him for a game? Probably also explains why the University of Miami has been a 500 program for a number of years, but send a bunch of guys to the pros. A lot of it is the coaching. But I think with Bill Musgrave, and this is the thing too in his defense, and again, I'm learning a lot about these guys as well in different environments. You know, Bill may have never just had the quarterback that he's had in Derek Carr. You think about Bill's last time as a coordinator, it was with Christian Ponder, and we Raiders fans saw quite enough of Christian Ponder during the preseason when he was here. You know, really signed, and I think it was a smart signing, don't get me wrong, because he was able to help teach Derek Carr this offense, and it accelerated the learning curve. But Bill's done a great job with his play calling, and he's got confidence in Derek Carr, and that confidence trickles down on the rest of the team. And you know, Derek, look, on his own, inspires confidence. Great guy on and off the field. I mean, it's been neat to watch his development. And, you know, it's funny, too. You look at teams that passed on this guy. A team like the Houston Texans, they've got to be kicking themselves for letting Derek Carr slide by in the draft.
Now the Raiders own the tiebreaker over the Jets, but have to turn around and look at the Steelers and the postseason race right here at the halfway point. The Steelers are ranked 20th in total offense. Their rush offense is 9th, but they lose Le'Veon Bell. Talk about that loss. And Roethlisberger's not at 100% yet, but he's got one of the greatest wide receivers in Antonio Brown. I'm sure the Raiders have to be very concerned about that target.
Oh, they really do. And on top of that, you know, the Raiders, as you know, have struggled a bit this year covering tight ends. Mm-hmm. And that's where Heath Miller could really, really hurt this team. And I would expect the Steelers, I know they're going to try for balance, you know, and D'Angelo Williams is a real nice backup running back. You know, I mean, look, he'll fill in okay as a starter, but what do you have behind him? Isaiah Pede? I mean, guys like that. It's just, you know, Justin Todman or Jordan Todman, rather. I mean, the reality is this is going to become a more pass-heavy Steelers team than I think they would like in the absence of Le'Veon Bell. So it's going to really stress the secondary. So it's going to be up to the Raiders to affect the quarterback, to try to affect Big Ben. All those quick dropbacks make it awfully hard, though. And, I would expect Roethlisberger to be better this week. He's 2-4 in games when he's coming off of injuries with 8 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. So he hasn't always been the sharpest upon his return, and this was obviously his first game in a month since hurting his knee. So I expect, a desperate Steelers team in a lot of ways coming up on Sunday. Also, that early kickoff doesn't help. And JT, I asked Howard Katz, the NFL schedule maker, about that recently, and I asked him, why do you keep putting West Coast teams in these bad situations where they have to kick off at 1 p.m. Eastern time, 10 a.m. their time? That's an obvious competitive disadvantage. He said, look, if you're good enough, you win the games. But the reality is that for broadcasting purposes, this is where we put the games. So don't expect that to change anytime soon.
You know, Alex, as we wrap this up, this rivalry was voted number 2 all time by NFL Films, and they're not even in the same division. And I was looking at the history of this rivalry. The Raiders lead the regular season rivalry 12-9. They're tied in the postseason 3-3. And from 1973 to 81, the Raiders beat the Steelers 7 out of 9 times, sandwiched around the Steelers winning 4 Super Bowls. It was incredible that the Raiders in the 70s, I believe, were the better team. They proved it, but then they would run into the Steelers in the championship games. The Steelers got them 2 out of 3 times, and we know the winner of that game went on to win the Super Bowl. Imagine 9 Super Bowls, 9 between these two franchises. This is when we talk about the Raiders with 3, how the Raiders and Al Davis could have had 5, could have had 6, but the Steelers, along with the Dolphins that you're very familiar with, and those 70s football teams from Kansas City, how brutal those games were. I think it's the greatest era in the history of the NFL, and the Steelers and the Raiders stand out as good as anybody.
Yeah, you're right about that. And of course, this is, unfortunately, it took Kenny Stabler's passing this past year to make a lot of us reflect upon just how much fun, how great those Raiders teams were. It took us back to a different time. And of course, we're going to be reliving some of that again at the Pro, during the Super Bowl week when the Pro Football Hall of Fame voters gather together to figure out whether Kenny will be going in as a member of the senior class, posthumously, if he's voted in. And I think that he can. He has a very legitimate shot at that when you look at exactly what you're talking about. Because Kenny Stabler, not necessarily a guy with great numbers from a touchdown interception standpoint, things like that, but how about a guy who just won 100 games faster than any quarterback in NFL history, and that includes Johnny Unitas. He held that record for a long time, 150 games to reach 100 victories, and as John Madden said, you wouldn't want any other quarterback other than Kenny Stabler, and he's one of the guys you think about when you flash back to that incredible 1970s era. And the great thing about this now with the Raiders and Steelers meeting on Sunday is that the stakes are high. We're talking wild card berth here, potential division titles. I'm not going to dismiss anything at this point. One injury away, every team is a quarterback from falling back into the pack if you're a division leader. So, this one is a huge game on Sunday, and the fact that the Raiders are winning once again is going to make it a real fun one.
Alex, I know the Raiders and the Raider Nation really appreciate that. Tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
At Alex Marvez on Twitter. I am there. I'm around. I'm ubiquitous. I try to be.
You're the best. Thanks for doing this. We appreciate it. Raider Nation, how about that? Great job by Alex Marvez. And foo, Phil Villapiano. Guy just gets you fired up to watch Raider football. Raider fans, we'll get you set for the Minnesota Vikings next week. Go to Raiders.com or call 1-800-RAIDERS for tickets and do it again. Blackout.co Coliseum. Keep it going on game day. And tell your friends about the official Raiders podcast on iTunes or Raiders.com. For everyone at Silver and Black Productions, I'm JT. Good luck to the Raiders in Pittsburgh, and we'll get you ready for the Vikings next week.
Thanks for listening to this installment of the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders.